20. Open secrets. For a long moment, the old man just stared up at him. His face had gone completely white, except for his eyes, which had become bloody orbs. His breathing was hoarse and labored. He was shaking violently. Yet, for the time being, he still appeared to be lucid.
"What did you do for Iram Radik?"
Maul asked.
"Why won't he let you leave?"
The old inmate's lips moved, but the words they formed were too faint to hear. Blasters began firing again outside the sealed hatchway of the medbay. Leaning forward, Maul managed to catch his words.
"Egan,
your son is here,"
Maul said, glancing over to where the boy lay sprawled unconscious among a pile of surgical instruments. Then he looked back at the old man, taking in the sight of his maimed leg and the ever-broadening lake of blood that surrounded him.
"But you're not going to be in any position to watch over him any longer. Not like this."
The old inmate's face tightened. Already he seemed to grasp the severity of the situation.
"I can protect him,"
Maul said,
"if you tell me what I need to know."
He leaned in again.
"What did you do for Iram Radik?"
The old man nodded. When he spoke again, his voice was husky, a forced whisper.
"Saved his life."
"Radik's?"
Another nod.
"When was this?"
20 years ago,
the old man said.
"On Lochteen Depot, near the Giju Run."
"Where is he?"
Maul asked.
"Where can I find him?"
"Is he here inside Coghive 7 right now?"
Artigan's mouth trembled.
"He is."
Outside, the shouts of the guards got louder. Now the blasters outside were very close. Metal fragments were ricocheting off the inner walls, pinging and scraping into the medbay. Maul knew they'd have it open within moments. He turned, rising, and saw the older inmate's gore-streaked face gaping at him just inches away. He reached out and grabbed Maul's wrist. Somehow, beaten almost to death and missing a leg, the old man had still managed to marshal his strength.
"Where is he now?"
Maul asked. The old man gaped at him, forcing the words out through sheer determination.
"Egan,"
he said.
"Egan knows everything."
Before Maul could ask again, there was a sharp click, followed by a humming noise as power came back on. Overhead fluorescence shuddered through the medbay around them, their intensity revealing the true ruin of the old man's face.
"Hold it right there!"
a guard's voice shouted. The doors slid open as guards burst into the room, blasters at the ready, flanking it on either side. Maul heard guards' boots thumping toward him as they knocked him to his knees, grabbed his arms, and pinned them behind his back. He started to stand up and felt the unmistakable hot metal ring of a recently discharged blaster barrel pressing against the back of his skull.
"Don't move, maggot!"
the guard behind him said.
"We've got orders to take you directly to the warden."
The hot steel nudged harder against his skin.
"But that doesn't mean you might not have a nasty accident along the way."
Maul growled. Only then did he turn and glance back at the old man, who lay in a heap less than a meter away.
"Egan knows everything."
"Let's go,"
the guard said.
"Now!"
Maul turned his gaze from the old man and rose slowly to his feet to follow the guards out through the hatchway into the open corridor beyond.
Spindle.
They brought Maul up in the crowded service lift, two guards flanking him on either side with another at his back, jamming the barrel of his blaster against his spine. Gazing up into the reflective surface of the lift's interior, he recognized the face of Smite, the young recruit who had first screened him when he'd arrived.
"What are you looking at?"
Smite asked him. Maul's lower lip drew back enough to reveal his sharpened canines.
"Touch me with that toy of yours again,"
he said, his voice utterly expressionless.
"And you'll find out."
Smite's face constricted, but he didn't poke Maul with the blaster again. When the lift came to a halt, the COs ushered him into the gleaming office, whose sleek and elegant interior couldn't have been more dissimilar from the rest of the prison. Stepping through the doorway, Maul saw the dark-haired woman with cold blue eyes standing just inside behind the desk. Her gaze was steady enough, but the smile on her face looked as if it had been glued into place by a pair of none-too-steady hands. "Inmate 11240, she said. "I'm Warden Siddiqui Blur. You'll forgive me if I don't shake your hand." Maul said nothing. "We've had some unseen developments down in Medbay this afternoon." She nodded at the monitors behind her. "Our surveillance of that time period is incomplete, and I'm hoping you'll be able to help me fill in the gaps." Maul didn't respond.
"You heard the warden,"
one of the guards said, not Smite this time, but a heavyset man with thick black eyebrows.
"Tell her what you did to Voistock."
"He had an accident,"
Maul said.
"You're a carking liar,"
the guard snapped, reaching for his blaster.
"Actually,"
Siddiqui said, waving him off, not taking her eyes from Maul, "I'm not even remotely concerned with what happened to Officer Voistock, or who was ultimately responsible for him getting exactly what was coming to him. By all accounts, he was as lazy as he was stupid, and he died in the process of aiding and abetting an ultimately unsuccessful escape attempt. None of which is particularly unusual around here, except that he went about it with remarkable clumsiness and incompetence." She gave a slight shrug. "Whatever fate befell him, I'm sure he deserved it. He will not be missed." Now her smile was different, absolutely confident, even radiant, and Maul realized that his initial assessment of the warden had been wrong. The nervousness he'd perceived had been nothing more than an affectation, meant to throw him off his game. In a strange way, he almost admired it. "What I am extremely interested in," Siddiqui continued, reaching behind her desk and taking out a tablet so that Maul could see it, "are these electroencephalograph readings. Perhaps you recognize them?" Maul glanced at the screen, watching the easy waveforms oscillating across it, rhythmic sine waves of deep sedation. "This is a recording of your brain activity from your initial med screen upon arrival at the Hive," the warden said. "And here you'll see something very peculiar." She tapped a switch and the waveform jumped, lurching into an erratic, spiking landscape of sharp peaks and dips. "What's happening there?" Maul met her gaze with absolute indifference.
"I have no idea."
"Really?" Something subtle twitched at the corner of the warden's lips. "See, now that's really interesting. Because you've got my medical droid completely stumped. If you look here," she pointed at the screen, "there are certain very specialized aspects of your cortex activating that the droid has never seen on any level of REM sleep. Apparently, this particular waveform is called an Omicron spindle. My droid says it's only seen it in certain very proficient telepaths, which makes you very special indeed." Maul's face remained cold and expressionless. Siddiqui reached out and touched his face, tracing her fingernails down over the curve of his jaw. Leaning in, she dropped her voice to a whisper.
You've got a secret friend. And here's the crux of it. I don't think you're in my prison by accident. And I don't think you're here to fight.
Then maybe you should let me go,
Maul said.
Oh, she said with a smile. I could never do that. Not now that you've become such a favorite in the galactic gambling community. You've become quite a star, Jagannath. That is what they're calling you, isn't it?
The Tooth?
Maul stared at her narrowly. At length, his attention was drawn to the desk that occupied the far side of the office. Underneath it, something was glowing very faintly, casting an almost imperceptible green light across the tan carpet. He looked up at Siddiqui, who still held the tablet in her hand.
Let me see that.
This?
She hesitated a moment, then handed it to him.
Suit yourself.
Maul took the tablet and regarded the flat display screen for a moment, where the waveforms of his brain's electrical activity twitched and spiked. He shook his head.
This means nothing to me,
he said, and with a flick of the wrist tossed it across the office so that it hit the floor under the desk.
Siddiqui gazed at him serenely.
She didn't seem at all bothered by this small outburst. If anything, it seemed to validate her own suspicions about who he was.
You're quite an exceptional specimen, aren't you? Exquisitely trained, practically custom-built to survive in almost any environment. Fierce, quick, resourceful, and adaptable against any imaginable obstacle or opponent. A precision instrument of savagery.
She paused, her voice softening slightly.
In a way, you really are the perfect inmate for Coghive 7. You are the one we've been waiting for.
Maul's eyes darted under the desk where the warden's tablet had landed. The display screen reflected upward to reveal what he'd thought might be there. A tiny streamlined piece of electronics emitting a faint green light from the underside of the desk.
He gazed back at Siddiqui.
Are we finished?
Not quite. She gestured at the guards. Leave us. Smite appeared uncertain.
Are you sure you...
Now! Siddiqui gestured them out with an impatient jerk of her head, shutting the hatchway behind them and sealing it. When she turned back to face Maul, her expression had changed yet again, becoming focused and intense.
You weren't supposed to survive your match with the Wampa, she said.
You've deduced that for yourself, I suppose. In fact, I'd be willing to bet there are a great many things that you know, but that you're not sharing with me. Like why you're searching for Iram Radik. Maul's expression was unchanged.
Is that a question?
You may think that your true purpose here can be kept secret, but rest assured.
Her face twisted, becoming angular and harsh.
There is nothing that goes on inside these walls that I won't find out about.
You will inform me what you've already discovered about Radik's whereabouts here. And who sent you here to find him? She waited.
Was it the Dasilogic clan? The Huts?
Maul said nothing.
Very well.
She smiled, but there was no joy or pleasure in it.
Have it your way.
And in the meantime, Siddiqui's lips drew back slightly further, showing just the lower rim of her teeth.
Rest assured that I'm going to keep matching you. Eventually, I know you'll tell me everything.
Maul didn't move.
That all depends.
On what?
On who else is listening.
She blinked at him, not comprehending.
Meaning what?
Maul nodded back at the desk.
That device hidden under your desk is a miniature microphone. I'm guessing that you didn't place it there yourself. Which means you probably had no idea that it was there.
What?
Siddiqui turned away from him and went to the desk, bent down to look underneath it, yanked the device loose, and then stared back at Maul. The expression of shock and dismay in her eyes was profoundly gratifying.
So, Maul said, I assume we're done here?
XXII. Blue Witch.
In his errands for the IBC, handling millions of credits for clients whose financial privacy was vital, Vesto Slifford traveled with the usual arsenal of security and surveillance disruptors. Most were standard electromagnetic emitters, ion pulse shredders, and white noise generators. Gray market gear designed to foil any unwanted wiretaps or recording devices that might compromise his client's confidentiality. He also traveled with surveillance gear of his own, including the bug that he'd placed under Warden Blur's desk. These days, he scarcely gave any of these instruments a second thought as he installed them around whatever workspace he'd been given. Their deployment was, for him, as unremarkable as unpacking his overnight bag. But this time he'd brought along something special. A gift from the banking clan's lab techs.
We're still beta testing it.
The tech on Moonalinst had told Slifer before he departed, handing him a featureless blue tube about the size and width of his index finger.
We call it the Blue Witch.
Poetic, the moon said dryly. The tech shrugged.
It creates a void on the most sophisticated security holocams. Like a lens flare, except transparent. And it follows you around the room. Works on all electronics, audio and video. Completely undetectable. Careful, though.
He'd tapped a button on the bottom and the thing blinked instantly to life.
She runs hot.
Slifer had inspected the device and shook his head, handing it back.
I've got my own equipment.
Uh-uh.
The tech crossed his arms.
He wants you to take it.
He does.
I spoke to him personally. He wants to be assured that you've taken every precaution.
And so Slifer had brought the thing along with him. Now, sitting in his guest quarters off an unfinished upper level of Coghive 7, he switched on the Blue Witch and waited for his holo unit to activate. A high-frequency whine shivered through the air, and within a few seconds, he found himself face to face with the moon who had sent him here. Arguably the most intimidating presence that he'd ever encountered.
Magister Damask, Slifer said, bowing slightly.
Slifer?
Higo Damask was wearing a long-sleeved robe and a transpirator mask. In the background, the holofeed captured just the faintest hint of whatever world he was currently occupying. An elaborate fortress on a jungle moon of some sort. Slifer thought he could make out the cry of exotic birds in the distance.
You've taken all the necessary precautions for this transmission.
Yes, Magister.
And what have you learned?
Slifer felt a thin blade of anxiety slide upward from his stomach to press against his chest cavity. Though he'd only spoken twice with Higo Damask before departing for Coghive 7, he'd intuitively grasped that when it came to relaying bad news, it made no sense to waste time.
Distressingly little, I'm afraid.
Really?
Damask's tone was impossible to read.
That is disappointing. Have you made contact with Maul?
Not directly, no.
But the device that I planted in her office allowed me to listen in on a conversation between him and the warden. He denies knowing anything about Radik. Denies, in fact, that he's even been dispatched here to find him. Damask's eyes narrowed.
So he doesn't know that I sent you?
No, Magister. I was under the impression that you wanted your name kept out of it.
Slipher waited, feeling a thin film of perspiration gathering over his skin.
Was I mistaken?
For a long time, Damask said nothing.
Perhaps Maul's true mission here is more secret than I was led to believe.
If we know who his control was, Slipher began.
I know who his control is. That is not the issue.
Slipher nodded hesitantly.
Sir, if I may...
What is it?
Is it possible that Iram Radik isn't on Coghive 7? Or anywhere, for that matter?
With no way of knowing how this hypothesis might be perceived, he drew in a breath and pressed on.
Surely you've heard the speculation that the man himself doesn't truly exist. That he's, well, a sort of ghost.
A ghost?
A construct, fabricated by a cabal of arms dealers. A false front, created to intimidate the competition. I mean, the fact is that no one has ever actually seen Radik and lived to speak of it. Perhaps Maul is discovering that for himself as well.
Slipher's voice cracked, and he stopped long enough to swallow and steady himself.
Or someone has gotten to him.
Again, Damask did not respond right away, choosing to simply gaze back at Slipher over the bridge of his breathing mask. Then he reached out of view of the hollow. For a moment, Slipher feared he was going to cut off the transmission. But instead, a wash of data sprang up, superimposed over the visual transmission. Bright columns of digits and various ports of call rising over Damask's face.
18 standard months ago,
Damask said,
a Vigo from the Black Sun Syndicate docked an unlicensed shuttle out of Gateway. The destination was Coghive 7. That particular cargo was a load of stolen Taraski explosives that had gone missing from a Blastech heavy ordnance satellite the previous year. 6 months later, the same shuttle docked again. This time it was carrying a load of beryllium.
May I ask where you acquired this in...
It doesn't matter. You could have easily uncovered it yourself if you had lived up to your reputation as an analyst.
Magister, those specific ingredients...
Slipher stared at the hollow, struggling to absorb what was being said along with the columns of data. The conclusion was unavoidable.
You think someone's actually manufacturing thermal detonators here on Coghive 7?
Or worse?
I can't imagine...
Our intelligence indicates the most recent shipment to arrive was less than a month ago. Orbital detection identified the payload as weapons-grade depleted uranium.
For the first time, Vesto Slipher realized that he had nothing to say. Not that it mattered. The mask seemed to have grown tired of listening to him.
Iram Radik is not a ghost, nor is he a construct. A false front, or a figment of Command Galactic imagination. He is real. Given the facts at hand, there can be no doubt that he is alive and well and operating somewhere inside Coghive 7. And depending on whatever high-grade ordnance he may be manufacturing next, I have reason to believe that Maul's mission may represent a greater threat to galactic stability and my own personal safety than even he is aware of.
Sir, you're asking me to...
I'm asking you to stop hiding your inadequacy under the pretense of idiotic speculation. And do your job. Get the information before Maul does. Deliver it to me and me alone.
Yes, Magister.
In the meantime, you may find it helpful to remember that until you have satisfied your assignment, you can consider yourself a permanent resident of the prison. Is that clear?
Absolutely, sir. And may I add, if I have disappointed you in any way, I...
But it was too late. The hollow was cut short, taking Damask's face and the data flow with it. Slipher was talking to dead air.